We are live. What's up, Jason?
Yes.
What's going on, Robert? You have been on quite the media tour, though, lately, haven't you?
I have. I've been hitting all the podcasts because of my amazing friends, you know, that network. Network is our net worth. I'm telling you, it's just amazing. But I'm happy to be here. Your inaugural live stream. I mean, how awesome is this?
We are excited to start this off, the College Investor Live for 2023. And, you know, it should be fun. Like, I'm excited to chat with some amazing people, share some cool things going on. Let's have some commentary. If you're watching this live, we can take your questions. I almost remember like the old Clubhouse days. That's probably like a bygone era, but you know, we would just get on and we would just talk, you and I, and we'd have Miranda as well. And, you know, we would just share and spitball. And then, you know, after probably like 10 minutes, we'd finally get some readers that would chime in. And we'd answer their questions. And then some days, you know, we get distracted for an hour, I feel like, just chatting, you know?
Yeah, because there's just so much to talk about. And I think it's so needed to take kind of these, what seems to be like complex financial matters or money issues going around in the world, and then being able to dissect them or get different viewpoints. And we all have different viewpoints when it comes to certain money pieces. And I think that is so essential. And so when you told me you were going to do this live stream and have it broadcast everywhere, and I thought this was awesome because it did bring back the old Clubhouse days.
I know. And I think it's needed too, because, you know, I think as we get there, what's up, Seth? I see you watching. But, you know, as this world becomes more like, you know, just driven by video, I think people need to see that there's real people here doing real research, talking about real things. I mean, I don't know if you've seen all this AI stuff.
I was about to say that the AI stuff. I mean, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was telling people we got to be mindful about robotics and AI because that is going to affect labor. And because I came up to this realization, and we'll get to the AI piece. I was at Walmart and I saw a robot cleaning the aisle, and I freaked me out because it was the first time I ever saw a robot cleaning the aisle. And I go, this is fascinating. And then now I'm seeing them in different places, right? Not just cleaning the aisle. Some of them are stocking or restocking shelves. And, you know, we also know about the registers, right? The registers are kind of like self-service. So, I mean, I was really worried about that a few years ago. I've been raising kind of like alarm bells to say, hey, we need to talk about this because these are entry-level jobs or jobs that people enjoy or do that's going to be eliminated. And now with AI, I mean, AI is coming for our bread and butter. Like, I'm seeing AI do a lot of really, I'm going to use interesting stuff when it comes to writing content. And you're probably seeing that a lot.
Absolutely. I mean, I think so. The drama that kind of unfolded last week was the realization that major news sites, at least in the finance space, was Bankrate and CNET, and you know, these companies had published hundreds of articles, and they even had in the author box that said, you know, this article was written by AI, but fact checked and edited by our editorial team. And you know, I'm very mixed on it because I am worried about it. But I'm not actually so worried about it, because if you look at the articles that are being written, they are entry level, 101 level articles that, let's be honest, no writer wants to write. They're helpful, but they're not really like, it was like life insurance 101. Like, what is life insurance? Like, you know, they're knocking out a lot of this low hanging fruit with AI. And I don't think that AI can do the helpful stuff yet. And maybe it will, and we might get there, but it can't do investigative journalism. Like, it's not going to be diving into records and getting contacts at companies and trying to figure out how things work. And I think that's important right now. So some of our articles in the last, you know, few months, we've been having to do Freedom of Information Acts to get data from the Department of Education and the IRS for some of the stuff that we have coming out. And AI can't do that. And I don't think it ever will. And then it can't do this. It can't share the opinions, and it can't really share the uniqueness of every situation. Like, you know, everyone's got their own personal financial situation, and AI can say like, this is the optimum mathematically. Yes. But like, we know that that's not going to be the helpful for everybody. You know, everyone's in their own situation, their own boat, and you know, AI can't fix that. And so I think it goes back to like even what we're going to talk about today a little bit, which is New Year's resolutions. Like, how is AI going to help you create and maintain a New Year's resolution? I don't think it can. So
well, we don't know. We don't know yet. We don't know yet. And I have my feet or my foot or my hand in the Silicon Valley world.
Yeah,
I can't even talk. See, an AI is replacing my thoughts now. So I wanted to talk about, you said something about like what AI can't replace. And also what I want to share is how AI can't replace stories, personal mm-hmm. stories. You and I have been big on sharing personal stories from our readers, from our guests, from people that we've met along the way, because that's what truly draws people in. It really is that storytelling aspect of it. And, you know, I haven't seen any AI that's out there or that's being worked on that can capture these really captivating stories of real people. And I think when you mentioned early on why you wanted to do this live stream was to show that there are real people behind the brand. There are real humans. I think that's necessary because, I mean, I've seen some AI that take on the form of a human doing seminars and sessions. And I mean, I can tell they're AI, but I think these live things is going to get us to connect with more people and have some really awesome conversations, just like what we're about to have on New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Well, let's jump in. Like, so first up, do you even do New Year's resolutions? Like, is that still a thing for you, or have you kind of moved past it? Like, do you make a New Year's resolution every year? And it doesn't have to be financial, even though we are a financial show. Like, do you?
I do, but I don't call them resolutions. I call them commitments. So these are 12 commitments. So I eat 12 grapes. So at midnight, New Year's Day, I have 12 grapes. And with each 12 grapes, I send an intention, an affirmation, a confirmation, a commitment of what I would love to experience, accomplish, be fulfilled by in the year. So you can't call them resolutions, saying like, okay, these are the things that I want to do this year. But I tend to look at it in terms of, you know, what aspects of my life do I want to change? They're more like, how do I become a better person? And how can I improve in specific areas? And so it's not really goal set. So I'm not looking like I need to lose 10 pounds or I want to get that rock hard abs or I want to save $1,000 in my emergency fund. It's not that clear cut for me. And I think that has a lot to do with just I think that the whole idea of resolutions and sticking with them, and then all of a sudden life just happens. So I've evolved in terms of what I do, but I still use my kind of.
Oh man, we got a little lag there, but I like what you're saying because I think it shares that, you know, resolutions, goal setting, commitments, you know, are personal. And I think it actually, you didn't say it exactly, but I think it alludes to it, and it's your style, like how you do your life. And I think that's what, I think what people struggle with in personal finance, I think it's what people struggle with there, is that they're mold themselves into something that doesn't align with how they naturally have a style. So, you know, my style actually is more goal setting. I wanted to have a goal, and I need to have someone that's an accountability buddy to kind of help me with my goal. But I also only keep it to like one or two, because I know that if I try to set, you said 12 affirmations kind of things, that's way too much. I'm going to be overloaded. I'm going to get stuck and not do any of them. But if I do one, like start a live stream this year, I can usually get going and continue with it and try it out. And at least I'll learn, whether we go a whole year or go a few months, like we'll learn something from it. And I think, to me, that's my style. And it's just like when it comes to like budgeting, I'm a tech guy. I need tech. I like to have an actual app that keeps track of my finances. But I know why most people fail with budgeting is they try to conform to something that's not theirs, right? So like if you're not an app phone person and you try to use an app to budget, you're going to fail because it's not natural to you. If you're a paper and pencil kind of person, you need a journal. If you're an Excel spreadsheet kind of person, you need an Excel spreadsheet. Like you need to do a goal or a style or something that is natural to your own like analytical style. And that's what I think, you know, kind of what you alluded to is your goal is to do these 12 affirmations and like get there. But, you know, I don't know. Am I, do you feel like
no,
I'm on
you,
the right
no,
track?
You, yeah. No, you're on track because I have these 12, again, commitments to myself on how I want to become a better human being, but I do also have goals. And okay. I think the reason why I don't set goals as resolutions, it's because I used to stress myself out if I didn't achieve them.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like focusing on how to become a better person or at least start working on specific traits I want to have or improve certain aspects of my life. It gives me a bit more leeway and gives me that time and grace and things like that. So it's interesting, right? One of my affirmations was to be more visible on social media. And what's happening? I'm on podcasts. I'm here live streaming with you. Yeah. And so it's all kind of working itself out without me having this goal of I need to be in 20 podcasts or live streams. And how stressful is that? I set the intentions. I start getting the work done. Just making inroads, sending you an email and things like that. And all of a sudden, you know, things work out. But to your point about budgets, when you said you're the app type, I am the app light type. So I like using apps. I think apps help me kind of monitor where my money's going. But I was the spreadsheet person. I like to, and I started with writing down my budget using a spreadsheet because that helped me, like just working with the numbers and shifting, allocating, reallocating, that helped me be able to manage my cash flow. And then eventually I started using the apps to help me with understanding where my spending was going to see if I was getting away from kind of like the goals that I set with my budget. And so, but I can't live by it. And I know a lot of people can't live with the apps, mm-hmm. but I just got to say it is helpful in terms of kind of keeping you on track. So you don't have to live. By it, but it helps you keep on track, especially if you have that.
No, and I think you're spot on. And I also think that you might need different tools for your different season of life, mm-hmm. right? And with that being said, I was very diligent in tracking every expense and every piece of income to the details when I was a lot younger and I was just getting started. And, you know, as my finances have evolved today, I'm actually more of like a net worth tracker type person. I don't necessarily get into the details, but what I do is I like to have my app to have that screenshot of all my account balances. And I can actually just do the running math in my head. Like, why is that up, down, you know, whatever's going on. And then, you know, if something does look off, I'll dive in and see what's going on. But, you know, for me, I think that's more valuable. But when you're starting out, you really need to have the nitty gritty. Mm-hmm. Income minus expenses. And because let's be honest, like it's a tighter line too when you're starting out. Like you really typically don't have a lot of excess income beyond those expenses. And so $100 swing can really be impactful to those budgets. So, you know, we talk about resolutions, money resolutions specifically, but then there's also this stat that like 75% of people have already failed by like the time we're recording this today, 2 weeks into the new year. Why do you think people fail so much at resolutions?
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on this, and it has a lot to do with people setting resolutions that don't align with their core values. So if you're setting goals that don't align with truly what you want to have in your life or what you want to create or what you want to achieve, well, I mean, it is going to be really difficult. So if you think, oh yeah, having like a $10,000 savings goal is one of those things. And then you realize halfway in, you haven't even saved $10. We have to understand, why were you looking at saving that $10,000? What was the purpose behind it? And certainly we could talk about, oh, you need your emergency fund, you need your rainy day fund, you need X, Y, and Z to protect yourself. I mean, but that really has to align with someone's sense of self and also what they're looking to achieve. And I've seen this across the board, whether it's money, lifestyle, professional goals. If you're not setting these goals, these resolutions that align with the life you actually want to live, chances are you're not going to follow through. And so there's an interesting stat too about why gym memberships come up, look at towards the end of the year and the beginning of the year. And 2 weeks or 3 weeks in, people stop going. And gyms love this because they get the monthly revenue without the bodies coming into the gym, that kind of clogging up the workout machine. So they know this. They've done the math. They've done the statistics and go, okay, yeah, we can enroll 1,000 people because good chance there's only going to be, you know, 20, 30 of them coming in at any given time. So it's just really interesting for me when I see people set these very lofty goals. And when I ask them, what are they actually looking to achieve? I notice that there's not of an alignment in terms of their core values.
And I'm with you. I think Seth kind of just said it best right now. He said, I think a lot of it has to do with setting goals and no plan to achieve them. So it goes to the why, but also to the how, right?
Yep,
so yeah, like if you set a goal, but you don't have a plan, like, okay, let's talk about setting a goal. We're going to save $10,000. Well, where have you been to this point in time? Like, what did your last year look like? Do you have a delta in your budget or not? Like, you know, there's probably about 5 or 7 steps before you get to your goal that we need to talk about. And then you need to have those action steps. So $10,000, we need like $880 a month or whatever it happens to be, right? Well, then how do you get to that $880 a month? What does that look like? Are you going to save? Are you going to, you know, earn more money? Or are you going to do something different in your life? I think all of those impact the goal, but you know, no one likes to get into that nitty gritty. We like to make the goal, but then like, how do we action plan and do the work to get there? Right.
Yeah. I love that, Seth. And thank you for sharing that because yes, I mean, a goal is great, but without an action plan, I mean, it's just a dream, correct? It's not an actual attainable goal. And Robert, you probably can elaborate on how we can turn goals smart. I'm sure you've talked about that in the past and we've covered it. And I think people should understand how we can make goals smart.
I think, you know, it's smart goals, right? Specific, measurable, achievable. Oh man, I'm going to fail on the R&T. But you need to have a specific, measurable, actionable goal. And when it comes to your finances, your fitness, your health, all of them, you need to be very specific on what you're going to do. But what I think holds a lot of people up is, you know, to make something specific, measurable, and actionable, you're probably going to have to work through some negative self-talk. You know, you're going to have to work through a lot of the psychology in your mind that led you down this wrong path. And you're going to have to do some uncomfortable things potentially. At least it's uncomfortable. It could be uncomfortable, but it's uncomfortable in the sense that you're going to do a different behavior or routine. And then you have to do it for what, 30 days or something?
21,
right?
30 days. Yeah.
Action. You have to do the same action over and over and over again for 21 to 30 days before it becomes a habit or a routine. And if you don't do those things, it's not going to be built. And so I think it's very hard. And then I do think we have that psychology of being judged, right? Like, what do our peers think? What does our family think? Like, you know, we all like to think that our families and friends are going to be our biggest cheerleaders, but on the same time, we're always very embarrassed and unsure of ourselves when we take new actions because we don't know what they're going to say or what they're going to do, right?
Yeah. Well, because we are social beings and we are looking for social approval, social proof, social support. And I think that does play a role on why we fail at keeping with our resolutions and our goals. Because think about this. At the end of the year, in the start of the new year, everyone is talking about goals and resolutions. So overall, as a society, as a community, we feel this energy, we feel this pull and this discussion. So we're all excited because we can react to what's going on all around us. So yes, we're going to start talking about goals and things like that because everyone's talking about it. Well, what happens when people stop talking about it is what's important. And that's a social aspect of it. And then it's sort of like, okay, well, no one's talking about them going to the gym anymore or working on achieving that $10,000 savings goal. And maybe it's, you know, and then we come up with all these different excuses on not to kind of follow through. And I think for me, I've also made myself socially accountable on and with respect to certain goals that I set out. And I think, you know, one of them, which was this 50 state tour that I'm going on, I made it public. And the reason why I made it public was to make people that follow me to be like, hey, what's going on with that. So when they do a check-in and I'm like, oh, okay, I have not made any progress in the last week, but I'm going to go and try to make that work. So I'm with you on that.
I like it. You see, I think also at the end of the day too, I always like to remind people that you're being judged all the time. Like whether you like to admit it or not, your family is judging you. They're talking about you, but they also will talk about you in the future. And they're not going to necessarily remember all these little nitty gritty action steps. So they're like, oh, you're going to take a side hustle this year because you're trying to earn more money. Oh, I can't believe that they're going to go drive for Uber or Lyft, right? Like, how could they do that? But like a year from now, they're like, wow, you know, they're putting a down payment on a house. Like, how are they able to do that? You know, and they're still talking about you and they don't realize, you know, all the stuff that you did along the way to get there.
Well, it's so funny, right? Because I've been doing all these things in terms of when you talk about driving for Uber, I've driven for Amazon, I've driven different things here and there, like these little side gigs, just because I wanted to have that experience. And also, I don't mind the extra money at a certain point in my life. But then like I would get people doing the exact same thing. Like, why are you doing this? Aren't you past this? And I go, well, it's like, no, I'm having certain goals that I want to meet and there's certain experiences that I want to have so I can talk about it with people who need that support. And then all of a sudden, when you're doing quote unquote great big things, people wonder, well, wow, you're an overnight success. I'm like, yeah, 10 years in the making. to your point, you've been talking about all the things that I've been doing, maybe in a negative way. And now you're wondering how I got here. So let's take a look back. So I love the fact that you said they're going to talk about you either way. So focusing on your goals, focusing on your action items, I think that's the best way.
I like this question from Elle. So Elle just dropped this in the chat and she said, I'd love to find out what money resolution you're most proud about accomplishing and why.
Good one.
I know, right?
Yeah. Why am I being stumped by this, Elle? So for me, I can start. I think one of the proudest money resolution, I think starting out and having 6 months of savings to cover my basic living expenses. I think back in the day when, I mean, I didn't have any savings and people were telling me I needed to have 6 months of emergency funds. I was like, that's impossible. And realizing that I could take to that point small little action steps. I think I started with like $5 or $10 into that account. And then eventually I was able to kind of shift my spending and save a bit more. And then eventually I looked at the account and I said, oh, wow, I reached 6 months of basic living expenses covered. And so for me, if I look back at my financial journey, that was probably one of the biggest hurdles that I overcame when it comes to finance. And I'm very proud of that.
And I think that's awesome because like you said, there's all these baby steps along the way. I think my actual resolution was a step before your actual resolution. And it was, I made a commitment, and this was early on as well, to track 12 months of expenses and income diligently. So this was back when I had Quicken on the desktop and it was Quicken software. Yeah. I mean, this was early on, but like, I made it a point to go in every single day, categorize all my expenses, categorize all my income, and track it so that I could really even know what to do next. Because like we talk about like, let's save or let's invest. I want to max my IRA this year, but it was like, you know, I need to know like, all right, I made $4,200 and I spent, you know, $1,800 on rent and my groceries was $400. And, you know, like I needed to know that. And my problem was I actually just got lazy. So I would, you know, do it for a couple of days and then I wouldn't log in for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then you know what would happen? All of these transactions would just pile up, right? And I then just got too lazy. I was like, I don't want to go back and categorize all these transactions. And as a result, though, I got to the end of the month and I didn't really have any good data that I could use to make informed decisions. Like, you know, am I good to make this $200 IRA contribution? I don't know. I'm just going to do it because like, but then like you just get lazy. And then the bigger, the more it gets out of hand, right? The less and less likely I was to go and actually edit it and fix it and get the data right. Because I think we all know if you use an app or anything, you get these transactions and it like categorizes everything as random stuff. You know, like you go to Target.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, you go to Target and it says like you spent on gas, and you go to the gas station and it was groceries, and you buy something on Amazon, it says like auto repair, and you're like, what? Like none of this actually helps. So you have to do the work to categorize and put it all in. And so my commitment was to actually do that every day. And I did it. And again, once I got past that first month, guess what? I had this habit and routine and it became a lot easier. And then I was able to start making better decisions and really know where my money was coming from, where it was going, and you know, how, you know, everything, how I could achieve my goals, right?
Yeah, no, I love that. And I think one of the key things for me was setting up automation. So I was working on the behavior aspect of trying to reach these financial goals, meet these money resolutions, but also utilizing the tools that I had access to that helped me. So this way I didn't have to mentally think about, okay, I needed to make transfers into this savings account each payday, that it was going to be done. And it became habit for me to check to see if the transfer went through. I mean, I knew the transfers were going to go through, but that helped me and that motivated me to keep going. And also, like for you, you're able to do, you're starting with the tedious work, which I think is really important. And for me, I try to shy away from tedium. And so, and I can see why after a few weeks you started going, okay, I'm not sure if I'll go back into it like tomorrow, then tomorrow turns into 2 weeks and it does get harder and harder. And I think that's what tends to happen and throws people off when it comes to any type of resolutions. It's that we can go gung-ho all the way through and then eventually, you know, life just happens. And so we want to change the behavior. So if you make a commitment on your resolution in terms of just each day, I'm going to categorize my finances, or each day I'm going to transfer. I had someone tell me they were transferring a dollar from their checking account to their savings account for 30 days. And it seems like a lot of work, but they needed that mental shift and the actual physical, kind of like with the fingers, yeah, of shifting the money around so they can change and retrain their mind into that of a savings mentality. And I thought, hey, that's great, because yeah, we got to form these new habits.
And I love that, because I actually just love hearing these stories and these ideas, because we're all different and we all need something to help us change your behavior. And like, if you were to say like, I'm going to transfer a dollar a day to my savings account, people would look at you like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. But you know what? Honestly, it could be an extremely valuable, helpful tool for somebody. And so it's just like sharing these ideas, I think, are fantastic. So speaking of ideas, you came out with a book, your second one.
Yes.
Happy Money. Tell us a little about it. Do you have a picture? Let's hold it up.
I wish I could hold it up.
Oh my God.
Yeah. It's one of those things that there is a back order. So just to give you a preface, there's a back order on a book that hasn't been released, meaning that there is this pent up demand happening in the marketplace. And it has a lot to do, I think, with the topic that I'll go over. But the book is called Happy Money, Happy Life, A Multidimensional Approach to Health, Wealth, and Financial Freedom. And I wish I can show you this beautiful cover, and I don't, but you can. It's available everywhere. But one of the key things that I wanted people to understand is the relationship of the different dimensions that make you, you. And that is what I call the multidimensional approach to health, wealth, and financial freedom. And that is mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, social, occupational, environmental, and financial. And I share how money weaves itself into these dimensions and how these dimensions are overlapping, intersecting. They are. There you go.
Happy awesome. Money, happy life.
Happy there life. You go. I mean, there you go. It's so this was my attempt to show people why you probably have a challenging time achieving some of your financial goals, because there's a dimension that needs more of your attention than the money aspect of it. And so for instance, let me give you an example here. We know that if you're financially stressed, that tends to lead to mental distress. So if you have debt collectors calling you, if you have extreme amounts of student loan debt, if you're just living paycheck to paycheck, your financial situation is gonna start affecting your mental health. And so we know that relationship, but through all the research, and I did a lot of research, read a lot of studies, Robert, on this thing. And so what's interesting is that your mental health condition can also affect your financial situation. So if you're
experiencing spirals,
it's,
right?
It's a spiral. There's an inverse relationship. And so when we think about people, okay, yeah, you're mentally stressed because you have debt. Well, guess what? Maybe you're living in a situation, you might experience some financial trauma. You might be living in a situation that's really stressful at home, at work. Because of that, it affects your behaviors and most often your financial behaviors, because now you're using money as a coping mechanism to kind of treat some of the mental health issues that you're experiencing. And I even share that in the book. I talk about how there's a point where I didn't know which began first, my mental health issues or my financial situation. And I had to unravel all these things. And for me, this book has become like a labor of love. And it's just a very unique way of looking at money through the different aspects of what makes you, you.
And I mean, we've talked about this on so many occasions, and it makes perfect sense because money is so personal. Everyone's got their own story with money, and that story impacts the future of money. It impacted the past of their money. And like, you know, I feel like when we used to have our conversations, like most of the math of money you learned in second grade, yeah. Like if you can add or subtract, do a little multiplication, you have all the skills you need for the math of money. Like there's nothing out there that's going to help you. But what you don't have the skills for is all the behavioral stuff, the psychological stuff, like overcoming, like, you know, your past, but you know, what you learned and or didn't learn or observed. And now I feel like we have this day and age of social media and money, mm-hmm. which can amplify these behaviors and or put people in the wrong direction. So like, you know, we talked a lot about this, but how do you align? Like, so we know these things, like if someone's starting out and they're like, I want to get better with my money. Like what are some maybe first steps that people can take to align their happiness, their, you know, home, their psychology, to move in the right direction with money as well? Like, do you have some first steps or some starting points?
Yeah. So for me, I want people to understand that money can buy happiness when you spend it on wellness. And when I talk about wellness, those are those eight dimensions of wellness. It's not talking about like, you know, buying candles or spa treatments or even a vacation. We're looking at shifting and changing the wellness dimensions more for a long-term impact and not just short-term. And so for me, anything starts with understanding where you are today. You've talked about it, getting to the nitty-gritty, getting into the nuts and bolts of your finances. And since what I wrote about was how money weaves itself. So that's the starting point. And I call that happy money. So that's the starting point. Financial wellness is happy money. Where are you today with your finances? And you got to look into doing that financial analysis, understanding your income, understanding your expenses, seeing if you are spending on things that align, and also determining whether or not you can cut back on certain areas so you can meet your actual goals. So that is the first step. It really is performing that financial analysis, understanding the numbers, because understanding the numbers will help you then set goals. And then we kind of look into the other dimension. So here's an example that I like to share when it comes to occupational health, which I call happy work. Happy work is really essential for all of us for well-being. I don't know anyone, and you can correct me on this, but every single person that I've spoken with, multimillionaires, billionaires, retired early, retired traditionally, they say that they are still working in some capacity, but not the traditional definition of work. They're working on something more purposeful. And so when we're looking at people who are dreaming about retiring, there's a financial component of setting a retirement goal, setting the financial numbers. But also I want them to understand that issue of wanting to feel productive and being being part of a team isn't going to go away. And if you don't address that need of kind of doing purposeful work while you're looking at achieving this retirement goal, you're going to find yourself not achieving the retirement goal because you're going to be spending just to cope with the fact that you're not doing work that aligns with yourself. So that's just one kind of way for people to understand how money weaves itself.
Absolutely. And then I always think of what like Jacob just said on LinkedIn. He's like, the poverty mindset has been massively challenging to overcome for me. And I see that a lot because I spend a lot of time on Reddit. I read forums. Poverty finance is one of them, but also anti-work is another one of these forums that's on Reddit. And, you know, you can see the mindset interwoven in a lot of the comments there where, you know, it's been years and years of the same type of financial situation and combined with the work situation and the income level. And, you know, people do just kind of get worn down and they don't necessarily even know how to take that next path forward to change the situation because like, it is like, how do I just get to this next day?
Yeah,
how do I just get to like Friday, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think for me, I wanted to elevate the conversation on, for people to understand why it's challenging for them to reach their financial goals. Not because, yeah, there may be income limitations, there might be debt, there might be family obligations that prevent one from achieving goals sooner or later or what have you. But they also want them to look at things holistically and what other aspects of your life is affecting you, because then you can address kind of the most pressing area. So when we talked about mental health and when we talk about financial well-being and how they're interwoven and they interact with one another, well, yeah, you can solve the financial issues you're facing, but if you don't resolve any of the mental limitations or the mental health issues, guess what's going to happen? You're going to fall back into retail therapy, and that retail therapy is going to cause you to overspend, and it's going to cause you to buy things just to feel good at the moment, and it's going to take you further away from your actual financial goals. So when you look at yourself in this dimensionality, you start realizing, okay, I'm progressing financially, but perhaps I need to start looking at my mental health. I need to look at my mindset. And there are studies that show when we are facing mental health issues, the best thing we can do is focus on mental growth exercises. These mental growth exercises are gaining new experiences, gaining new knowledge, education, and having different conversations. And how can money buy these things? Well, you can buy courses, you can buy programs, you can have access to therapy, you can pay for therapists, you can pay for a whole host of things to give you access to new knowledge or different knowledge, because that new data set that your mind attains, well, then it uses it to reframe your current situation. Because if you're just constantly hearing the same thing, if you're constantly reading the same thing and just having the same type of conversation, your brain is only acting based on that set of information. When you start introducing new data, your brain then starts looking at your current situation differently. And that is one way to get out of the poverty mindset. Start reading books of how people achieved kind of like their growth in terms of financially or professionally. And that just introduces, again, new concepts, new ideas. And then you're going to start seeing and making different connections. And that's how I look at how can money buy happiness? Yeah, by spending on these things that give you knowledge, that give you access to people and new environments that you normally wouldn't have access to.
It makes total sense. So like, does money buy happiness? Yes. But I don't think it buys it in the traditional way that Correct. Everyone says, right? Because like, oh, I make, I don't know, you see the study, it varies by year. Like once you make $80,000 or $120,000, like your happiness, you know, diminishes. And, you know, there definitely is a level that you need to get to of financial comfort, like stability, right? With Maslow's hierarchy, right? You need to provide shelter for yourself, food for yourself, you need to take care of yourself. Once you get past that certain point, though, it doesn't mean you're going to be marginally happier because more money is coming in. You need to start addressing these other things. And you use the word, you know, mental health a lot. And to me, I think there's a big stigma in using that word. And because I think most people attribute the idea that you need to improve your mental health with a disability or an issue like depression mm-hmm. or anxiety. But it's not just when I hear you talking about it, it's more of expanding your knowledge. It's more of realizing that there's different viewpoints. And, you know, you might not be depressed or suffer anxiety or have like an actual critical mental health issue, but there's definitely things that you can do on your internal dialogue that can really improve your happiness. Is that kind of what I'm getting at?
Yeah. I mean, this has been the zone that I've been in the last couple of years, like a few years, researching and speaking with psychologists and therapists. And my brother, he's a doctoral candidate for psychology. And we talked extensively about mental health and also like my misunderstanding of it, because I just want to take a step back, is I thought emotional health and mental health are kind of the same thing, because we're talking about what we're feeling and what we're thinking. And yes, that's a psychological piece of here. And so when I do talk about mental health, there are two things here. There we do face mental stresses that affect how we think and feel about ourselves, and it affects our mood. And then there's also clinically diagnosable mental health issues such as depression, anxiety, and we can list a number of those things. And what I learned through my research and conversations with smarter people more than me in this realm of psychology and psychiatry is that if it goes back to our emotions, our feelings about our given situation. And interestingly enough, is that we tend to think it's like, okay, well, this is just how I feel, but how you feel is a result of the environment in which you are currently living in. So that could be your physical environment or just the state of, let's say, your financial situation, right? Causing you a great deal of stress. So now you're in a fight or flight mode. Now you're going to respond whether angrily, passively, however, you end up responding because of your emotional response to your financial situation. But guess what? What's really interesting, if you don't address the root issue of what's causing the emotional distress for two, like, you know, and this lasts, this emotional state of fight or flight, this emotional stressful situation lasts for far too long, it actually can turn into a diagnosable mental health issue, because it starts impairing your cognitive functioning. It starts impairing your ability to assess your actual situation. So when people have been so financially stressed because of debt, because of income, because of just the situation that they're living under, well, after a period of time, they are going to start feeling depressed. They're going to feel anxious, because that unresolved situation that led to a very lengthy period of emotional stress has now impaired their actual cognitive ability to process. So when you're talking to someone who is in deep, let's say, financial situation, and they can't see their way out, or we talked about poverty mindset, well, that's because their brain is just rewired or wired that way because of all the mental things there. And so what I've learned, it really is changing the situation, kind of not just saying this is how I feel emotionally. And I cover this in Happy Heart, Emotional Well-Being in the book, but it's about looking at the deeper rooted issue and going, how can I assess my emotions? How can I perceive them? How can I manage them and respond accordingly? And so, for instance, in the book, I shared how I used to shy away from the phone calls from creditors, because like I knew I wasn't paying the bills and I was so scared to answer the phone call. That was actually creating a greater deal of stress for me, avoiding the phone call. So that led me to a state of, yeah, I was facing kind of financial depression at that point. But in order for me to change my emotional health, I needed to pick up the phone, have that conversation. And that gave me a bit of reprieve to move forward.
And it makes a lot of sense. And you touched on this too, is that everyone has a different way of handling these situations, right? So you ran the gamut of like, I'm upset. Some people do take action. A lot of people shut down though.
Yeah.
And I think that's the harder one with your finances, because those bills keep coming. Those collectors keep calling you and shutting down and avoiding it, while it might seem like it's a safety net to you at this point in time, it just compounds the issue, right?
It does. So that's it. We have multiple coping techniques when we're stressed, which is retail therapy we talked about, and avoidance. So yeah, we're going to avoid the situation believing it's going to help us. And that's okay. So it's okay if you're going to avoid that phone call, you're going to avoid looking at that email or having the conversation. But if you avoid the situation for far too long, it will affect your cognitive processing. And that goes into the mental health aspect of it. So now it gets even harder and harder for you to unravel or find a solution. And I'm sure you probably have these conversations, right, Robert, with someone who has a, let's say, student loan debt, and mm-hmm. there are all these different resources, and they've been mired and been stressed out about their student debt situation, that when you talk to them about the debt repayment plans or refinancing or side hustling, everything's like, no, that doesn't work for me. And that has a lot to do because their brain has just become wired because of all that emotional distress and because of the avoidance, perhaps. And so that's why it's like, I get excited talking about this because I want people to understand why it seems so convoluted to solve our financial issues, because there are all these different aspects of us that is making it challenging.
You're spot on. So I'll tell you a story. In 10 years, I've written a lot about this stuff. I think we're on like 12 years of the website right now. And one of my challenges, and I'm going to give a shout out to Paula Pant, and I stole this from her, but I've used it many times over the years. And she has a saying that says, show me your time and show me your money, and I'll show you what you value.
Yeah.
And so one of the tools that I've used a lot, especially on my getting out of student loan debt stuff, is I've responded, because I get some really heartfelt, you know, tough comments, especially when it comes to private student loans, because private student loans really don't have a lot of options. Yeah. And it's like, people hate to hear it, but like earning more money, going out and side hustling is one of the better options. Maybe it's not the perfect one for your situation, but it is a better option than some other ones, potentially. Yeah. And so I get a lot of flack back on that, right? I don't have time for this. You don't understand my life. Like, I can't go and do that. You know, a lot of negativity. And so my response is, well, you know, I'd love to chat with you more. Show me your budget. Let's take a look at what we're trying to close every month. Like, what's that delta? And show me your calendar. And I have probably said that to well over 100+ people at this point in time, and zero have ever taken me up on it. And I think it goes to show that I think people really, there are options, but, you know, I think also people don't necessarily want to hear the options. There's been a lot of funny TikToks and YouTube shorts going around about like the wife that just wants to vent and share those problems. And then the husband is there and the husband's like, I have a solution for you. And she's like, I don't want to hear your solutions. Like, I just want to yell at you and share my problems with you. And I do feel like that is also one of the problems here, is that a lot of people just want, what is it? Misery loves company, right?
Yeah.
They just want to share their problems. They just want their problems out there. But I feel like a lot of people, they don't ever necessarily want that solution to their problem, right?
Well, again, too, the reason why they don't want that solution to their problem has to do with their brain has been rewired to not want an actual solution. That has become their actual state of living. Like, that situation, their brain is so used to that situation that it scares the brain to figure out that there's something else. It's the most wonkiest thing that I've read and I've learned in this kind of like deep dive into psychology, is that our brain is there to protect us. And sometimes what it does, it keeps us in the situation it knows best. And if that situation is financial distress, it's just going to keep us there. And we know we want to, like, emotionally, we know, okay, I need to get out of this. But our brain has been wired in a way where it's sort of like, there really is no way out. And so that's why when I talk about money and we talk about it, it's like, we gotta talk about those thoughts. We gotta talk about those feelings, because that is really the stumbling block. And for me too, I love that quote you shared with Paul Pant, because I've said something very similar. That's, yeah, show me your time. Show me your money, and you could see what you value in life. And so, I mean, I've been there too. I've been in that state of living and realizing I needed to shift my mindset, and then realizing my mindset had was connected to so many other aspects of myself. And what I want to challenge people is that, yeah, if you don't address these mental and emotional aspects of your well-being, it's going to manifest itself physically. You're going to start feeling ill. You're going to be like, I can't get out of bed. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I can't get into work. And if you can't get into work and it starts affecting your job performance, guess what? It's going to start affecting your money. And if you don't address these root issues, guess what? Those physical ailments turn into medical illnesses that's going to need prescriptions, that are need doctor's visits. That's going to impact your money. And so it's like, it's just wild for me, like finally having this revelation and going, okay. And I don't want people to be overwhelmed, right? And I know we're getting to the top of the hour, but I don't want people to be overwhelmed. Like, oh, you told me there's eight dimensions of what makes me me. Like, where do I even begin to start? And you ask that question, well, financially, what are the first steps? And that's my premise. Focus on understanding where you are today, doing that financial analysis, accepting the situation, and then looking at what are some of the solutions. And I love when you mentioned, yeah, making more money. I mean, people love saying, hey, cut back. Oh, yeah. There's only so much you can cut back, right? Before it affects your quality of life. And the truth is, yeah, making more is going to allow us to cover our current living expenses and also allow us to expand in the future. And that is also a shift from poverty to quote unquote rich, or from the scarcity to the abundance mindset.
Yeah. And I'm with you, but I think again, it's that mental self-talk that's going to hold people back from that earn more, because it's like, I feel like they have that belief that going and driving for DoorDash tonight is going to reinforce that they're in poverty. But, and then they make the excuses, well, I'm only going to earn $6 on this, delivery. And, you know, the gas is $4 or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but you know what? You're $2 better off now than you were 30 minutes ago. And you also didn't spend that money at home watching Netflix, shopping therapy, whatever it happens to be. But like those small steps, I think are really hard for people to get started on. And you know, it just takes to start. Most people don't do this forever. Most people just need a side hustle. They just need to change their mindset. And then other doors start to open up once you get going, but you have to break that mindset first, which is always the first start. So I guess we're almost at the top of the hour. I was like, do you have one last hack? Like, how could someone just snap that mindset? Is there like any kind of magic bullet that you could just break the mindset and just go? I don't know.
Well, no, there is no magical bullet, because again, there are different aspects. Here's one thing I want people to understand. Environmental well-being. This is what I call happy space in the book. This is the physical environment in which you live in. And that includes if you have a cluttered home, if you have a cluttered desk, if you have a messy car, did you know studies show it impacts your finances? That's because your brain is processing the clutter, is trying to keep tabs where all these things are. And when your brain is focused on keeping tabs of the clutter, it cannot perform the cognition that you need to make financial decisions. So if you're wondering why you can't, or you don't feel motivated to take that initial step of doing your budget or that financial assessment or calling up the creditor or getting out of the house, look around your living space. Are you overwhelmed by the things around you? Because that has a lot to do with your mental state. It is taking up your mental bandwidth. And the one hack is cleaning up your space, decluttering, in addition to cleaning up your workspace. Like, and that will just make you a bit more productive. And
I wanted to share this with you one last shot. Exactly what you said is how you physically handle your money also reflects your money mindset. And from those same studies, if you keep your money in a bag and it is all crumpled up and not organized, it usually means that you're broke. And if you're semi-organized, like you're starting to get your bills, but they're not in the right order, they're kind of folded, like you're definitely getting organized, working on money goals, and then you're crisp and you're on track. So if you ask anyone that's a millionaire, I guarantee you that all of their money in their wallet is in denominational order and it's crisp. It's just how it goes, and it reflects that you're spot on.
Yeah, that's so funny, because I actually just saw someone with their wallet, and it was just a jumbled mess of receipts and money and coins in the wallet and things like that. And since, as you know, too, I'm a breathwork specialist, and something that I like to share with people, the importance of breathwork. And I always know this too, this person was breathing heavily through their mouth, like very short. So I knew this person was in some type of distress. So we got into a conversation, and it did lead up to financial situations and work issues. And so you're spot on. So there are these things anecdotally that I see live from people just paying attention to also how people dress, what people, it's things that I normally would be like, no, don't worry about how someone's dressing. Don't worry about how, what someone has in their wallet. But now realizing all the data, all the research, the studies I've read, wow, it's a peek into someone's mental state. And so for me, it's not a judgment. It's like, what can I do to make them aware of it so they can shift some of these behaviors to reinforce the better mental habits?
Absolutely. And that's it. And that's the key to making your New Year's resolutions actually work for you.
There you go.
We went full circle.
Full circle. Full circle. I love it. Love it.
Jason, why don't you spend a minute here, promote yourself, promote your book. Where can we find it? When's it coming out? Give us the details.
Awesome. So thank you all. I'm Jason Vitug, founder of frugal.com and author of two books. And my second book is coming out, Happy Money, Happy Life, A Multidimensional Approach to Health, Wealth, and Financial Freedom. Releases on February 1st, available everywhere you purchase your books. And you can find and follow me on social media. I'm active on Twitter and I'm active on Instagram. Instagram, you're going to see my lovely photos of my travels around the world and my yoga and breathwork stuff. And at Frugal, where I do all the money talks.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jason, for being here on our inaugural live stream. I'm Robert Farrington. I'm the founder of the College Investor. You usually see our team out there, Justine and Andy, and Justine's going to actually be with us tomorrow, and we're going to be talking all tax. So if you're interested in the best tax software stuff, we'll be here tomorrow. We're going to be rounding up our best picks and why we picked them and what you need to know this year. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Be sure to like, subscribe, share this with your friends. It always helps us out. Thanks, guys.
Thank you all.